That's why everyone was just in such shock about it, because everyone just loved her. Who could do this to Sarah?
Oxygen's new show, Abuse of Power, is a competent piece of crime programming that may have no real reason to exist. And we're starting to wonder if my guest's notoriously elusive Unsolved Mysteries episode even does exist, but I am willing to pay for proof. Hitmen, Manhunts, and Robert Stack, it's just another episode of The Blotter Presents. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to episode 55 of The Blotter Presents. The Blotter Presents, of course, is the TV true crime take from previously.tv. I am having a couple of soundboard issues. Fortunately, my guest tends to be sympathetic to my clumsy travails. He is my husband. His name is Dan Patrick Brady. Hi, honey.
Hi, honey. I'm very sympathetic.
at least doesn't make too many comments about it. Today in our most wanted section, maybe we're going to play this clip. Come on, soundboard. We will be talking about Abuse of Power, which premiered this past Saturday on Oxygen, and I believe will be airing every Saturday at 7 o'clock on Oxygen. These are like really weird premiere times that they have for these new things. In any case, it's pretty much about what it sounds like. People who are abusing power and committing crimes in the service of that. I felt that the first episode's connection to this theme was somewhat tenuous, but let's hear the case file compliments of murderpedia.com. Fred Tokars was, at best, an unlikely criminal. As a one-time prosecutor and current defense attorney, Tokars had seen both sides of the process and what happens to those convicted of crimes. Yet Tokars was faced with exposure of exactly what he was, a felon with ongoing criminal enterprises, by a wife who knew a little too much. That drove Fred Tokars to murder. This writing is about to drive me to murder. Fred Tokars took out a hit on his wife, which was carried out in front of their two very young sons, who are interviewed fairly extensively in Abuse of Power's premiere episode. We'll get to them later. First of all, Dan, were you familiar with the Tokars case? Because I feel like this is one of those cases that I've probably seen in passing on Dateline with Dateline on OWN or Disappeared or just any sort of other true crime show. I feel like I'd seen the story before, but I also felt like I was watching it unfold for the first time. Did you know about the case?
I did not know about the case, but I totally agree with you. I mean, I feel like this could have been told on any show that we stumble upon when we can't sleep.
And as in so many of those, I found myself wondering why he couldn't just get a fucking divorce. The reason is that he started out as an ADA in Cobb County, Georgia, which is where the Atlanta Braves now play. Boo. And he started out as an ADA and then became he'd switch sides of the aisle, and I think was into like tax law or like marital property
law or something like that. But he also, I mean, he became a judge at some point in time.
Yeah. And he was like a part-time judge, which was a situation that they didn't explain how that was still happening outside of the, you know, 1820s. But anyway, here is what his clientele was like at the beginning of his defense attorney career. And we'll also hear a little bit about why Fred Tokars' lawyer splaining may have indicated to his late wife's family that he was capable of murder, or at least being murderously annoying. Here's clip two.
He represented Evander Holyfield's wife.
He introduced me to a lot of his partners at his office in downtown Atlanta. You could tell that they thought that this guy was like Superman.
From the outside, they did look like that perfect couple. He was the ambitious lawyer. She was the beautiful, pretty, nice, stay-at-home mom. He had those two adorable little boys, a beautiful home.
Fred Tokars is becoming a powerful figure around town, but his relentless drive is starting to affect his home life.
I don't remember my father being around. He would be out of the house early morning to late at night after my brother and I had gone to bed.
The time that we did spend with them, he seemed like he did have a big ego. You could never have a conversation with him where you go back and forth. It was always just him talking about himself.
Yeah, not that that sets him apart from, you know, most people. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and the president, but anyway, yes, sorry.
Well, speaking of the president and things that he and Fred Tokars might allegedly have in common, basically what happened was he became increasingly like abusive and paranoid toward his wife, Sarah, and was also getting involved in increasingly unsavory activities on behalf of his clients, including money laundering. And Sarah found some documents in a safe in their house. And I think his ostensible reason for having her killed instead of getting a divorce is that she could have blackmailed him into.
Right. I mean, she asked for a divorce twice.
And yeah. He refused. No. And he was also like extremely, like he was making a lot of money from these criminal enterprises, but was parsimonious in the extreme, and she had to like beg him to even get like $20 for the kids' school lunches. But he definitely didn't want her to get custody of the kids. Like, based on the voiceover, that seemed more important.
Well, I think the kids were probably a power tool.
Oh yeah,
you know, I mean, I don't really get the sense that he really cared about the kids, although they didn't really go into that much in any degree. So.
No. And certainly if you care even a little bit about any other human being, especially a child, you don't have their mom murdered in front of them. The show that you've heard so far is like fairly standard stuff. The voiceover is pretty well done. It's not too damp. But I was particularly impressed and also depressed by the access that they had to the kids who are now grown. This all went down like late 80s, early 90s. And how, you know, how sort of unrehearsed and like not by numbers the interviews were with them. Let's hear clip 3, in which the sons talk about what it was like to see their mother shot in the head with a 410.
My mom was slumped over, so I turned the car off and sat there for, you know, I don't know how long, 30 seconds, a minute maybe. I lifted her back and was shaking her, saying, "Mom, wake up, wake up." And after not getting any response from her, I knew she was hurt.
My brother, he said, "Mommy, you can't die on us now." He helped me out of my seatbelt, and he and I ran towards a house with a light on. We had to crawl through bushes, and there was thorns. But it was like nothing hurt.
Okay, that music cue is maybe a little much, but you almost never hear. I mean, maybe that's a little like overwritten, quote unquote, that comment from Mike, who was the younger son, I believe. He was like 4 at the time, I'm going to say, and the older son was 6.
Yeah, the oldest was 6.
Yeah. So, but I was impressed by that, or like I took note of it. It's rather bracing for, like, this is a pretty, you know, Like, it's like an IKEA furniture crime show. You take it out of the box, you build it, it's perfectly functional and kind of anonymous. What did you think about the interviews with the sons?
Well, I mean, that was the strongest point of the entire show. In fact, it was the only part of the show that I found to be noteworthy at all. I'm really confused by the title of the series because
Let's get back to that.
Shall we wait?
I mentioned it before and I said that I felt like the power part of it, particularly like abuse of power, is so broad as to be almost meaningless, apparently, because what was his power? He had connections in the DA's office.
Well, they didn't prove that. They didn't. The only time that that's actually they offer any evidence of that at all is when she has a private investigator following him to see if he's cheating on her. And the PI later on says that he felt that this was kind of dangerous because of the connections the husband may have had. And a cop shows up to find out why he's hanging around someone's house looking for the dad.
I will also, I just want to interject quickly in our visual aids for which you can find on our social media, which is at Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. There were a number of like B-roll and establishing shots that were not terribly well done. I was watching a screener. You may not have spotted this in the finished product, but they're doing the like, to denote a PI, they have him like picking up a camera and there's like cigarettes on the seat of the car, but it says herbal smokes on the pack. It's total theater cigarettes. Like, why bother with it then? And then there's one scene where they're newly married and they're happy newlyweds and they're walking down a hallway in their house with a bottle of champagne, like holding hands. Like, okay, the celebratory hallway hand-holding picnic. I mean, there were some weird things that I assumed the final product.
I remember that, but they also used the hallway theme later on when they were arguing. She would be walking down the hallway. Now, they never did any actual dialogue in any reenactments with any actors. All you saw were sort of like blurry images of people from behind that you assumed looked like them, from the pictures that you saw of the actual people involved. But they did do a couple of B-rolls of people walking down a hallway. He's obviously gesturing like he's arguing at her.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a theme.
Yeah.
That was a metaphor.
Yes. Well, let's go back to, unless you want to talk more about the title of the series, which I think was just like, well, we don't have a series named that.
Well, I'm going to be a little bit pessimistic and say that we've got a lot of stuff that's happening right now in the nationally about possible abuse of power. And so I think that they latched onto that. And they chose this as the beginning show because there was money laundering involved. But then they didn't demonstrate anything that showed his actual power. They made reference to it. A few of the people made reference to it, but there was no demonstration. There was no exhibit B, exhibit C of how he manipulated anything to get off scot-free. I mean, when did police determine that he was possibly guilty? They responded like they seemed to respond in every other show. He was not able to pull any favors there that they could demonstrate or that they even brought up.
Well,
what?
Here's one thing that Fred Tokars was absolutely guilty of, and it was absolutely terrible overacting of his grief. True. Let's hear a little bit of that in clip 4.
I just need to see her. I don't think you want to see her this time. She was shot. The wounds
I mean,
the laughter you heard in the background was not in the actual tape of the show. That was my loving wife.
Well, no, look, this piece of shit. Oh, no. I want to see. Like, what tape did he study to make those acting choices? Muppets outtakes? Give me a fucking break, Fred.
Well, yeah, it is terrible. On oxygen, so, you know. So
but that's, I should note, that is actual Fred Tokars, an actual Cobb County detective's in a interrogation audio tape. That was not reenactors. The reenactors, I'm pretty sure, would do a better job.
Yes. Later on, of course, I don't know if we have this tape or not, but later on, of course, when he's talking about, he does do something that was on TV where he talks about being left alone, where he kind of again overacts.
Oh yeah, no, we have a clip of that. So let's jump ahead to clip six.
A week later, facing intense media scrutiny, Fred holds a dramatic press conference.
After taking some back pain medication, I became very depressed. I'm sorry to think of the lifestyle that I was losing. Unfortunately, I did something to put my life in danger. I made a bad mistake.
That was just horrifying to us. Why would he even talk about his lifestyle? It just seems so callous and, ugh, it just didn't make any sense to any of us.
It was just telling.
I emphatically deny any involvement in my wife's murder, and any suggestion that I might have been involved in any way deeply hurts me.
All it did was confirm that, you know, this guy's into this thing up to his neck. He's good for it.
I'm begging you just to leave us alone.
It's really starting to unravel on Tokars.
Yeah, it is. And on his acting coach. We should note that this was after a suicide attempt.
Yes, we should.
And I certainly do not mean to make light of the pain suffered by sufferers of depression, but that fucking guy. Ugh. But I did like, here's another thing the show did well, just so we can jump back to clip five for a quick second. I liked the candor of the cops. Like, they also sounded less rehearsed. There was not a lot of footage of them typing, which is like a true crime B-roll classic. Just Google true crime bingo card and you'll see the bingo card I made in which people typing figures heavily, and we just yell typing every time we're watching these. But we thought he was good for it. Like, that's such a cop thing to say that they don't usually say in shows like this. And in clip five, you have one of the lead detectives admitting that the tip line really was not helping and they were at a complete loss.
We got all kinds of calls and we ran every one of them down.
Most of them had no information that was helpful.
I was asked many suspects we had, and I said, I don't know, look in a phone book. I don't know who did it.
Well, I appreciate your honesty.
But then they also, in this show, do the same obvious thing that they do in every freaking show where they go, but then there was one call that led us to, you know.
I know. And it's like, crime. Oh. That turned out to be nothing, too. Okay, show over at 37 minutes. Like, no, that's not what happened. I forget the exact chain of events. I think someone who worked with
The sister of the guy who actually shot him, the wife.
Right.
Dropped the dime on her brother.
Right.
Who was someone who was employed by...
Or who was friends with someone who was employed by Tokars.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Either way, they caught the guy. Oh, and while all of this is going on, while the investigation is going on, Tokars has custody of these kids that he doesn't really care about, certainly didn't care about traumatizing. Like, he's a bad dude. But when I think abuse of power, I think like Nixon, Putin, Huey Long, half of New Jersey. I'm not thinking about someone like this guy who was abusing like the title of human being.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. I mean, there are dynamics in a relationship where someone can be abusive, terribly abusive. It doesn't lead to abuse of power in the sense that they set it up. They started with this show with the concept that this guy is a lawyer, this guy is well connected with the city, this guy is a judge, this guy is friends with cops X, Y, and Z, powerful, politically rich. And what he was a really, really bad husband, a bad father, and a murderer.
And a bad lawyer.
And a bad lawyer, yeah. But we could have gotten all those things without any of that supposed power that he wielded. I mean, dynamics in relationships, one person has power or the other person has power, or they are able to balance it between the two of them. But none of that has to do with... necessarily with one's station in life.
Yeah, I just think it's
one's gender or anything else.
I mean, call it something like base it on something else. Like, I don't know, bad dudes named Fred.
Yeah.
Or call it, you know, what would be funny is you know, that joke. What do you call a thousand lawyers at the bottom of the ocean? A good start. Just call it a good start.
Or you could call it Trump needs a lawyer. By this guy.
Barristers gone bad.
Barristers gone bad.
And then you can include people whose last names are like Barrister. Let's play our last clip in which, once again, the cops who were on the case are still quite affected by what happened even 25 years later.
It's been years and years, but I still think about those poor kids. And Sarah, she was a good girl, a good person, a good mother. Love those kids. Sad.
As far as I'm concerned, he's not even man enough to admit what he did and seek forgiveness. To me, that's a weak person who preys on weaker people, who abuses their power. I want nothing from them. I want nothing to do with them. And I'm embarrassed that I even have the same genes as him, to be honest.
I mean, like, go with that angle. Like, I know they sort of, like...
They used the phrase, abuse of power.
Yeah, right? So they were like, drink! And then they were like, all right, you know, that's our angle. But, I mean, just in that Talking Head interview, there's so many other options for what the show could be. Like, you could just call it, like, Forget You, Dad. And have kids whose parents were murderers just be like, yeah, fuck that guy. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in case it wasn't clear to everyone listening, that the last part of that voiceover was the oldest child and his response after all these years to his father being in jail. And I assume he's still in jail.
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he was given a life sentence.
Yeah. And he's not getting out. So yeah, abuse of power, the name is misleading. They put it on at a weird time, but the time they put it on is prime time for what we call hotel TV. You're probably not going to make a point of watching it when you're at home, but between the wedding and the reception, perfectly serviceable and perfectly superfluous television that is going to be on every major like hotel chain's package of channels. It's, you know, quite well done. It does a couple of things that are unexpected. It picked an interesting enough case. It's just mistitled, and I don't think I'm going to watch any more of it because I have books to read. Dan?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm simply not intrigued. I mean, I can find this story in just about every crime show, you know, and you sometimes told better, but certainly it's not.
He represented Evander Holder.
Sorry about that.
That's quite all right.
Once again, the soundboard haunted by the restless ghost of Sarah Tokars, as well it should be. So yeah, I mean, I don't not recommend it. It's not terrible. I've watched far worse. But on a scale of hashtag killer post to 10, it's like a 4. All right, folks, we're doing something a little bit different for our cold case section this week. In which we try to crack a cold case of our very own. On our first date, Dan informed me that he'd appeared in an episode of Unsolved Mysteries. As our fifth wedding anniversary approaches, the episode remains elusive. With help from the Blotter Presents listeners, I'm hoping to end the hunt for Dan Patrick Brady. Yeah, I know y'all are sick of my mentioning this shit. I'm sick of mentioning it. I need to find this goddamn thing. So that's why we are hoping that you guys can help us track down this episode. Here is what we know. We know roughly when it was filmed. Dan, you think you shot it 1988 or 89? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it was probably 89 when I shot it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We know roughly what Dan looked like at that time. There will be a copy of his headshot, which was taken, I think, a year after that.
Yeah, pretty much. I was incredibly handsome.
And remains so to this day. Since. Hasn't lost an inch off the biceps either. Ladies, look out. So we know what he looked like. We know that roughly the genre of his segment. We don't know the story, but we know that it was a wanted section. Is that right?
That's correct. Okay. So here's a little bit of background. I played a nobody. It was so stupid. But basically the story was they were trying to find this guy. I think his name was Joe. It was played by an actor. I do remember this. It was played by an actor with bright red hair.
Okay. That's good intel.
Yes. And someone who was in his mid-30s, slightly, let's say roughly 6 feet tall, and thinnish. Okay. Not emaciated, but kind of thin.
Slim. Okay.
Slim. So basically what I did was I played one of the detectives who found him, and that truly amounted to about 30 seconds of screen time. So,
well, this is more screen time than I had heard in the past. You made it out like you were like it was like a split second of you leaning on the hood of a car and pointing a gun at the guy. Were you doing that?
Yes, I was doing that. Now what happened was they had police there to actually tell us what to do when we reenacted what was supposed to have happened, and we were supposed to walk the guy from the house that we found him in to this car and put him in the car, the police car.
Okay.
And I, of course, trying to be Mr. Butch detective guy. I think I was dressed, by the way, in a black t-shirt, if that helps. But I immediately whipped out my revolver and pointed it at him and sort of traced him as he went from the house to the car and got in the car. Whereupon one of the policemen who was there going, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "What? Are you gonna like shoot the windshield of the car out or something like that if he moves? That's not what we do." And I thought to myself, "Why am I here? They should let the police. This is. I don't have any words. I'm not doing anything. I'm merely walking a guy to a car. An actual, honest to God, real policeman could do that." But then I saw,
which is what they used to do in the first season. They had many of the reenactments were just the people reenacting the scene.
But I made $400 that day.
And you continue to
make about $5 to $10 every time. I forget to cash them, but they do exist.
We have a whole lot of Cosgrove Mirror bookmarks around our house. It's true.
So
it's not a Seinfeld situation, though. They're not like 17 cents. They're like 40 bucks.
No, they're not. I mean, it's very rare that they're that high. I think they're more like, I mean, they've gotten as small, or at least some of my residuals have gotten as small as like literally a dollar or something. But I think it goes on sort of a loop. So if they restart it again, then you get the higher quote unquote grade, which tops out at 40 bucks.
Okay.
Let's get rid of it. So.
All right. So that's what we know. 88 or 89 is going to put it somewhere between, I think, like seasons 2 and 3 is probably when it is. Who knows how long they held certain segments, but provided they, you know, shot things and then aired them on a reasonably regular schedule, somewhere in there, 1 to 4 at the outside. I figured out that you can watch all the Robert Stack episodes on Amazon Prime. And I was like, why don't I just go to the end and look at the credits and see who the reenactors were? Duh. Well, here's the problem. In season 1, they only list reenactor credits for episodes 1 to 3. Season 2 has reenactor credits for all the episodes, but it's like 2 people when there were definitely like 5 or 6 reenactors, so it's not super helpful. Finally, I just halfway through season 3 gave up and was like, all right, we gotta put the internet on this, because the internet can find anything, which sometimes is not great, but in this case yes. Is
some of the things that the internet has found we don't really appreciate.
Yeah, but on the other hand, Tessa Thompson and goats. So here's the thing. You, listeners, can benefit from my inability to find this thing, and here's how. If you are the first to positively identify Dan Patrick Brady in his episode, I will treat you to a true crime book of your choosing, in any format you like, sent anywhere in the world. Within reason, it can't be some out-of-print thing that's $150, and if the format is me reading you, like the Executioner song, maybe we have to have a little chat about your priorities. But if you would just like to read American Fire in hardcover, I am here for you. So again, if you can find Dan in his episode, I will treat you to a true crime book of your choosing, any format, anywhere in the world. So to review, filmed in probably 89, headshot of Dan will be on Twitter and Facebook. It was a wanted segment, and Dan played a detective who was wearing a black t-shirt. Were you wearing a blazer or no?
No.
Okay. And it
should
is
be some armage available.
Okay. And it is, and he is fit, folks. And it is likely not season 1, but could be.
I don't think so. I mean, I think the show was on for a while when, you know, the only reason I got the show was that my next door neighbor was one of the producers.
Okay.
And brought it up to me one day. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. But it had been on for at least a year, I think, before that.
But the, and also, like, but it was definitely Robert Stack. We're not talking about, like, the Raymond Burr specials that kicked everything off.
No.
Because I don't know where the hell those are.
For every mystery, there is someone somewhere who knows the truth. Perhaps it's you.
I just had to listen to that clip while going through those episodes, like literally 70 times. And here's the clip I really want to hear. Update. So, folks, Unsolved Mysteries on Amazon Prime, or wherever you choose to watch Unsolved Mysteries. We're talking Stackisodes, early seasons, Dan Patrick Brady. Find my man.
And don't blink, because you'll miss me.
Don't blink.
Look for an idiot trying to shoot a car. That's a big hint.
That'll narrow it down.
Sure.
All right, my darling. So much of our relationship centers on true crime. It's really kind of shocking and pathetic. But where else besides Unsolved Mysteries might listeners find you and your work?
Who, me?
Yes.
Are they,
you.
Are listeners looking for me? Do I have to get paranoid about this now?
I don't know. Maybe someone wants to buy a warehouse.
Listen, if anybody needs to buy incredibly expensive houses and or buildings, I'm your guy. Anywhere in the entire world. If you want to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars so that I can retire the way I should, then yes, please come find me, or I'll find you.
Dan, I think that might be an abuse of power.
Woo.
Okay. So, folks, we got a lot of stuff coming up on the booking sheet. As the weather heats up, so does the true crime TV schedule, weirdly. Next time, we've got Crime Writers on host excellence, par excellence, Rebecca Lavoie on the case of Kaylee Anthony. Coming up, we'll also be talking about Joe Berlinger's The Wrong Man, Dead North, Evidence of Innocence, Godfather and Son, Last Defense, and the Smithsonian Channel's Prohibition miniseries. So I hope that you will hang with us all summer. We've got a ton of good stuff to talk about. Do you have a tip for the Blotter Presents Case Files? Visit our forums at previously.tv or hit me on social media. That's at Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. And if you have Dan Patrick Brady clues or tips, you can do the same. My guest is Dan Patrick Brady. You can find him on Twitter at, sing it if you know the words, Dan Patrick Brady. I'm Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. We'll talk to you next time.